Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Steve Jones Show here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. We have made it to Friday. The Super Bowl is about 48 hours away in Arizona as the New England Patriots take on the Seattle Seahawks. Commissioner Roger Goodell with his State of the League press conference today. We have a big show coming up today. Coming up in a few moments, we'll talk about the NHL, first of all, with Pete Jensen from NHL.com. He'll be joining us on the show. We'll talk about some of the problems with the Penguins and so forth and the Flyers and the NHL all told. College basketball talk with Adam Amin from ESPN. In the next half hour, Dick Girardi, my broadcast partner for Penn State basketball, will be in the 4 o'clock half hour. And in the final half hour, we'll break down the Super Bowl with Wayne Larrabee, the play-by-play voice of the Green Bay Packers, who saw the Seahawks in person just 12 days ago and saw the Patriots in person about 6 weeks ago because they both played the Packers. Today's show being brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. All right, and we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, which 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now to bring in Pete Jensen from NHL.com. Pete, welcome. It is great to have you with us. And I think a lot of people are wondering right now, why are the Penguins struggling, Pete, offensively at this stage?
I mean, it's tough to explain right now because, I mean, on Tuesday they got Chris Letang back. They were scoring in bunches. He had 5 assists. Crosby was back last night. They kind of fell victim to Ovechkin and a very hot Braden Holtby in Washington, got shut out. I mean, to me, this top six forward mix, even down to the top nine, is really just being impacted by injuries, and there's no other way to slice it because otherwise you have guys, you brought in David Perron, who's an exceptional, flexible winger who's great on the power play, shoots a lot. Patrick Hornquist, also a great right winger, shoots a lot. I mean, you have Malkin, who's sidelined now. Crosby just came back. So it seems like we have this conversation every year, but this team cannot stay healthy, and it's a big problem from a continuity standpoint.
Yeah, the Flyers have been able to hit a pretty good stretch of late. Why?
I think I mean, they've been able to limit the opposition's conversions on the power play, which has been a brutal area of concern for them this season. They're getting Steve Mason back soon. That's a good concern. I mean, that's definitely a good sign for them. They're about 10 points back of the Bruins. I don't see the Bruins falling out, especially now that they've gotten healthy. But the Flyers, you know, have gotten something from Wayne Simmonds over the past few games. To them, it's like a second-line thing. If you can get that line rolling, take some pressure off the third line, and continue to get top-notch production from Claude Giroux and Jacob Voracek, two of the top 5 scorers in the NHL, you have a nice combination. But again, defensively, that's always the concern with Philly. And they've tied up some loose ends lately, and it's paying off.
We were talking, the Kings and Blackhawks also played, and they play at a level that might be a little bit higher than everybody else. We know that you're talking about two teams that have been champions of late, but when you look at the depth of the two teams, what makes them a cut above as to how they play the game?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Kings, even though they've had some problems, and I think largely it's been due to the fact that Slava Voynov, probably their second best defenseman, has been out for most of the year because he had a domestic abuse situation, and he has not been playing. So if you're wondering why the Kings are not currently in playoff position, I think that that's had a ripple effect throughout the lineup, and we saw last year how deep the Kings' defense is. So many of those guys under 25 years old. I mean, you just watch the past few games. Drew Doughty takes a lot of penalties. I think he's like a Norris Trophy-worthy defenseman so far this year with what he's had to go through and keeping that team afloat. But it's just been, you know, a depth thing. But the Kings have been able to deal with that and roll with the punches. And it's just, and also now an injury to their backup goalie. I think Jonathan Quick has had some struggles, but still makes timely saves. And, I mean, the Kings really have weathered the storm so far. I mean, even now they got Toffoli back yesterday. I mean, they just have... they've had so many issues this year, yet their depth continues to hold true. Same goes for the Blackhawks. Early on, they were really struggling this season. Now they've just gotten an exceptional two-month stretch for Patrick Kane. He's tied for second in the scoring race right now. Scored a goal last night. These teams have the star firepower, but also have the complementary pieces throughout the lineup. Doesn't just go to the second and third line, also on the fourth line, and it really makes a difference. And just the overall speed and size aspect for both of those teams sets them apart from most of the Western Conference and pretty much the entire league. I mean, once again, I know the Kings have had some struggles, but you wouldn't want to play either of those two teams. That's the top of the list going into any postseason of the two teams you wouldn't want to run into.
Pete Jensen, NHL.com with us. Pete, put the career of Marty Brodeur into perspective.
I mean, in terms of longevity, consistency, winning Stanley Cups, he won three of them for a New Jersey Devils franchise that, I mean, you're seeing now, with the exception of Corey Schneider, who they got in a trade, they're having trouble, you know, recruiting via free agency and getting players to buy in right now. But Marty Brodeur, I mean, with the exception of what happened this year where he went to the St. Louis Blues and pretty much still thought he was a full-time starter, and the Devils said, you know, hey, we got to look to the future. An incredibly loyal goaltender who went through thick and thin with the Devils, very much a product of their system under Lou Lamoriello for so many years. But, I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. All-time winningest goaltender, most shutouts. I was looking today. He shut out his opposition more than 10% of the time over the course of his NHL career. That goes for playoffs plus regular season, which is just pretty insane. So, Marty Brodeur, you can make the argument, best overall goaltender in NHL history. You know, there's a couple other candidates for that moniker, but I think Brodeur, I just don't see anyone matching the longevity in terms of so many years starting 70 or more games. I mean, you see it run up to even the best goalie in the league this year. Pecorine for Nashville was on pace to start about 75 games, and he got hurt. So, and he's going to be out a few weeks, so he was on pace to shatter Brodeur's record, and you could just kind of put it into perspective. How good he was for so long with very few hiccups in between. A pretty outstanding career. Maybe the best of all time. I think it's arguable, but you can make the case for him over anybody else, I think.
Yeah, I look at him, and I remember Terry Sawchuk was that standard of excellence with shutouts over the course of his career when it was a different game. And Marty Brodeur has gone through a couple of different phases in this where the trap was so important at one point, and then the NHL loosened the rules. The two-line pass, which was a great move, they got rid of it. They've restricted the use of the trap and how you do that, and he still was outstanding. When you're that good when the rules change, what does that tell you about somebody that, you know, that it doesn't matter how they play the game, he's just that good?
Yeah, he is. He spanned over different eras. His success spanned over different eras of the National Hockey League game. And I think over the course of his career, he went from a solid to the best puck-handling goaltender in NHL history. I don't think anybody could argue against that. and just the success he was able to bring to the Devils, and just, you know, hearing some of the reactions around the league today, former players saying, you know, there was no goaltender that you would go into a game strategizing as much as when you did for Brodeur, and especially in the playoffs when everything was magnified, he still beat you. I mean, more times than not, he still beat you. For the most part, with the exception of 94, he owned the Rangers for very many years. He, as I mentioned, won 3 Stanley Cups for a franchise that, who knows the next time they'll win one. I know they got back there 2-3 years ago, but, you know, again, it's just the market he did it in, how long and how consistent he was. He was just so much better than maybe any other goalie that ever played the game in that regard. And again, product of the system to a point, but you got to give the guy a lot of credit because he had great defensemen in front of him for so many years, but just really such a consistent force during his 20 or so years in the league.
Pete, they're about ready to start making the turn for home here, February, March, and right. April. Who at the moment is going along that it wouldn't surprise you if they caught fire and made a run here? Who would that be?
I mean, you got to look at what's going on with the New York Islanders. I think some people expected them when they traded for Johnny Boychuk from the Bruins and Nick Leddy from the Blackhawks and Yaroslav Halak, who everybody remembers for, you know, the playoff run he went on about 5 years ago, and he's been a very steady goaltender. But I just see, and it really also boils down to the fact that they're being forced to move from their longtime home in Nassau County. I just get a sense from that team and so many of the components that they're a very even-keeled team, and each and every one of those players in the locker room has something to prove. And I think that's and even, you know, you look at a team like Colorado last year, burst onto the scene and then flamed out in the first round of the playoffs. A lot of young players. I mean, this is a group with a top five NHL talent, John Tavares, a great goaltender, much improved defense. They roll 4 lines deep, and they're not getting ahead of themselves. You know, it's been a pretty amazing run for them so far. They're tied for the lead in the Eastern Conference, and they haven't lost more than 3 consecutive games this season at any point. So that's a team that, and they've won all 3 games so far against the Rangers. So, and they've only had 2 losses in the division. So it's just, you can roll through all the stats, but I mean, it boils down to a team with a lot to prove and a team that is going to continue to stay hungry because, by the looks of it, they know that they haven't won anything quite yet. I mean, they're still only 3 points ahead of the Penguins and for the division, but that's a team that is going to be scary if they can finally click and win their first playoff series since the early 90s. That's a team that's going to be scary. A lot of teams around the league are taking notice of them.
Pete, it's always a pleasure. Appreciate it very much. Love the talks. Love the information.
Thanks so much, Steve. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks so much, Pete. Pete Jensen, NHL.com. Our thanks to him for joining us. Adam Amin, ESPN, next half hour. Dick Girardi in the 4 o'clock half hour. And Wayne Larrivee, the voice of the Packers in the final half hour on today's show. And today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And, of course, we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We head to the bottom of the hour in news, then Adam Amin from ESPN to join us to talk about college basketball and more next half hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915. Sunbury Motor Company has over 300 new Fords and over 100 new Hyundais that must be sold now. Get savings up to $11,000 during the January inventory liquidation event at Sunbury Motor Company. Liquidation means vehicles need to fly off the lot as quickly as possible, and Sunbury Motors will do what it takes to earn your business now. See all of the great deals on new Fords and Hyundais now, because time is of the essence, and if you wait too long, the new Ford or Hyundai you've had your eyes on will be in someone else's driveway. At Sunbury Motor Company, they never pressure you into buying a vehicle you don't want or that's out of your price range. They want to make sure you're getting the best possible deal with the best possible service before, during, and after the sale. This is the time to buy that new Ford or Hyundai, and this is the place. Stop at Sunbury Motor Company now while the selection's at its best. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Our thanks to Pete Jensen from NHL.com who joined us in the opening half hour of the show. Still to come, Adam Amin from ESPN. He'll be joining us in just a few moments to talk about college basketball. And also, we'll be joined later in the show, Dick Girardi, my broadcast partner, Penn State basketball for the last 10 and a half seasons. Nittany Lions on Wednesday night beat Minnesota 63-58, second straight win. They're at Illinois tomorrow at 1, airtime set for 12:30. Final half hour, old friend of mine that is one of the true pros of pros, Wayne Larrivee, the play-by-play voice of the Green Bay Packers, who just saw the Seattle Seahawks 12 days ago, and he also, about 6 weeks ago, saw the New England Patriots because they both played the Packers. Of course, they had to play Seattle in Seattle. The game with the Packers and Patriots took place at Lambeau. We'll get his perspective on the Super Bowl. But he also had a slice of history because he was the play-by-play voice on Westwood One Sunday when Mike Krzyzewski won the 1,000th game of his career, and I want to get his perspective on seeing history in the making for that. So in a few moments, we'll be joined by Adam Amin from ESPN. First of all, we want everyone to know, as always, that today's show is brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. It is Super Bowl weekend. You need to stock up and make sure your Super Bowl party is fully stocked, or if you're going to a Super Bowl party, that you have plenty of great items to bring with you so that you walk in not empty-handed, but with something they say, I can't wait to invite them back again. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection in beer. Soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day, and the pickle bar is second to none. Brewers Outlet screams Super Bowl party. All right, you have to make sure that that is your first stop where you go and you take care of everything in one-stop shopping for a big weekend and a lot of fun. Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. We are in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now to shift gears, talk a little college basketball. A little bit later, Dick Girardi and then Wayne Larrivee. But now we bring in Adam Amin from ESPN, part of the broadcast group. He's got Kentucky and Missouri. Adam, welcome back, my friend. It is great to hear your voice again.
Oh, Steve, it's always a pleasure, man, anytime.
Okay. You got Kentucky shoot around, which is where you're at right now, and they've got Missouri coming up. When you have taken a look at some tape of them and have had an opportunity to see a little bit of them, they're the number one team in the country. Explain how their length affects the game.
You know, and you took the word right out of my mouth. It's length. It is absolutely length. And the reason is, when they put their front line, which is, and I know it's a little smaller without Alex Poitras since he's been hurt since December, but it was the biggest front line in the country. And as a matter of fact, it would have been the biggest front line in the NBA outside of the Portland Trailblazers if you still had Poitras in that lineup. So just to give you some perspective out of the NBA teams that you watch on a nightly basis and how big those big guys are, Kentucky's as big as those big guys. So that's something very interesting right away. Now, it's easy to just look at the shot blocking, and they're the best shot blocking team in the country per game. They're one behind Texas for total blocks. So it's easy to just look at the shot blocking, but how do they get those shot blocks? I talked to Seth Greenberg, who's also going to be on the broadcast tonight, kind of on the benches. So when you tune into ESPN tonight, you'll hear Seth as well, and he'll talk about this. Kentucky does a really good job of using that length to angle off drives. So it's not just getting in and blocking shots. Their length forces an offensive player to angle away from the basket, makes the shot more difficult, and that hence makes their blocking that much easier. That's why they get so many. Obviously, the length is there, the physical tools are there, but they do a really good job in their set defense of forcing offensive players who are trying to go to the basket away from getting there. That's what that length does, and that's why they're so good defensively.
Yet offensively, I would say they're good, not great. Harrison, I think, is a good point guard, but I think what keeps him from being, in my personal opinion, when I've watched Kentucky play, I think what keeps him from being a great point guard is he doesn't do a very good job of putting the ball into the shooting pocket of the shooter, and I think that's where they get held back. I think the backup kid, the 5'8 point guard that they have, actually might be better at that than him. What's your thought on that, and what has Seth said about that?
You know, on tape, that's what it looks like, and a lot of people have been talking about that. We're going to talk with Calipari probably in about an hour, and I'd love to get that perspective from him as well. But that's something that a lot of media talk about, a lot of people that watch Kentucky on a pretty consistent basis talk about. They're saying Ulis, who's the guard that you're referring to, 5'8", 5'9", kid, does a better job of getting it to guys in rhythm and in a shooting pocket, I think is a great way to say it, because you want, as a shooter, and Kentucky's got maybe the best one in the country in Devin Booker, and Ulis and Booker are really good friends. They go back a long, long way, so they already have a lot of rhythm and chemistry with each other. But Ulis does a great job of getting Booker into the right spot when they put Booker off a screen, or if he's making a cut back towards the wing. Ulis does a great job of delivering great passes. Now, the thing I will say in Harrison's defense, he is a scoring point guard. He's a guy who can light it up. And when you are a scoring point guard, you're worried about a lot more than just delivering the ball. So you have to make a couple more decisions in that split second. You're deciding, should I pass it here? You're going to get, and the other thing too, because you're an offensive threat, you're going to be defended a lot better, or you're going to get a better defender on you, or you might get a double team on you more so than Ulis is, because Ulis isn't going to light it up offensively necessarily. He's going to find guys and not going to make mistakes. Harrison's got to worry about a couple of other things because of as good of an offensive threat as he is. That being said, I still think he's done a really solid job. When he's running the point and he's taken fewer shots at times in games this year than he has in years past. Now, granted, he's playing a lot more point guard, and he's leading this team in minutes. So, I'll give him that defense more than anything else. He's worried about a lot when he's on the floor.
Well, it's a picky point. That's about what it is. You're talking about a really good player.
I'm going to mess with it, right?
Yeah, it's a picky point in terms of my question about him as to how can Kentucky be even better than they are.
I think that's absolutely correct, Steve. I think if they want to take that next step, it's trying to just get a little bit more consistent in their guard play in the backcourt.
You've also seen Notre Dame. Notre Dame just beat Duke, as a matter of fact. Notre Dame is number one in the nation, Adam, in points per possession. Discuss the efficiency when you have seen them in person.
I had their game Sunday on the road, hostile environment against an NC State team that had beaten Duke earlier this year. And they actually had a rough go of it. They had a bad shooting first half. They were 1 of 11 from outside in the first half. And then all of a sudden when they clicked in the second half and their offense got going, you saw the efficiency and why they're so good. Only Gonzaga, at least going into Sunday, only Gonzaga had a better shooting percentage overall this season among Division I teams. They lead the country in assist-to-turnover ratio, so they're not giving the ball up, so they're getting possessions. They're not giving possessions away. They don't rebound the ball all that well, but they haven't had to. When you're making 53% of your shots, you don't really have to go crash the glass, but they do rebound pretty well, despite the fact that they don't have a ton of size. That kid, Pat Connaughton, averages 8 rebounds a game. The guy's 6'5". So they get contributions from everywhere. Bonzi Colson comes in off the bench. He can rebound the basketball. They've got some size on the bench that they can bring in. But it starts and ends with Jaren Grant. And I think everybody in the country saw that last night. Anybody who watched our game Sunday saw that. And a lot more people watched the game last night. They got the sense that it starts and ends with Jaren Grant because he doesn't turn the ball over. He makes great decisions. He can drive to the basket. They don't take, for the most part, they do not take bad shots. They run their offense really well. It's a really, really good system that Mike Bray has. And he has shifted his system to the personnel. I mean, Steve, you remember Luke Arangode.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
they used to run the burn offense where they would just slow the game down, kind of like what Virginia can do now. They'll slow the game down, maybe muck it up a little bit, let those bigger guys go to work in the paint. They don't do that now. And Mike Bray knows he has the talent to play more of a run-and-gun, up-tempo style and let Grant make all the decisions. And it's worked phenomenally. I'm so impressed with Notre Dame.
What team may be flying a little bit under a radar at this stage that you've seen and you walked out of the gym saying, you know what, team's a lot better than people realize?
You know what, I saw them at a loss. And actually, you know, I might as well throw out both teams that I saw. I had a game last Thursday. I had Indiana-Maryland.
Yeah, okay.
And Indiana, I mean, they've lost their last two games on the road. They came into the rankings at number 22 this week. They lost on the road at Ohio State, lost on the road last night in a great environment in Purdue. But a lot better than people give them credit for, especially offensively. Can they improve defensively? Absolutely. They still gave up, you know, something like 70-some-odd points to Maryland.
Adam, I can tell you no uncertain terms. Tom knows they're not good defensively. That's why plays so many defenses.
Absolutely.
He plays all those multiple zones because he knows he's not good defensively.
And you know, they're not big. They're not a big team.
Montero
Perea, who's been injured lately, he was their biggest guy that played a decent amount of minutes every single night. They are not big, and they're playing different zones. I mentioned Mike Bray doing a great job of playing to his personnel.
Yeah.
Tom Crean has done just as good of a job of playing to the personnel that he has. He goes smaller. He forces teams to adjust. Farrell can light you up. As I saw last Thursday night, he went off, you know, 24 points, 7 of 8 from 3. Blackman's an excellent shooter. Troy Williams, I think, might be the glue guy, an unsung hero on that team. He does a lot of different things.
What an athlete.
To the floor. They're absolutely. I mean, he gets a step on you. He can run the floor. He and Indiana are a lot better than people think. And I think Maryland, even though I saw them in a loss, Mello Trimble had a rare quiet night, but very rarely has he been held quiet over the course of the season. They're very good. Lehman has basically, you know, their big guy is a stretch four, stretch five. He has turned the corner this year and become a potentially an all Big Ten caliber player at both ends of the floor this season. I think they have a lot of talent, and I think those are two teams that I've seen. I know you'll see them and have seen them already, Steve, that have gone under the radar this year.
Yeah, and one thing, I'll get to Maryland in a second because Penn State has to play them next week, and they still have two games with them. They're in the two-team rotation with them this year. One thing about Indiana, Yogi Ferrell, you know what's impressed me about him, Adam, and I want to get your read on this. He seems to figure out in the first 5 minutes what they need me to do tonight. Feed Blackman or feed Williams, or I need to score, or I need to go to the bucket. He to me is a team first point guard and a Yogi Ferrell point guard second.
You know what I think really speaks to that is he doesn't go off on these stretches where he's just shooting 2, 3, 4 shots in a row.
Right.
Four straight possessions, Ferrell's taking the shot. That's never the case. It's Ferrell hits a three, then the next possession he's going to go down and kind of see what the defense is giving him. Then he's going to defer to Blackman. Or he'll come down a second straight possession, try to drive, and then see what the defense is giving him. I absolutely agree with that based on what I've seen the couple games I've watched on TV and seen them in person. He's very, very – I'm not going to call him unselfish because he'll be selfish when he needs to be. Sure. There was a stretch, I think, two straight possessions where he shot threes, and one of them he missed, which I think was his only miss of the night against Maryland. But, you know, that was the one time he wanted to see, I have a good shot, let me take it. But he's absolutely the right guy to run an offense like that where they have multiple – and you can't even call them weapons because nobody outside of Blackman and Farrell are a consistent light-you-up-every-single-night type of guy in Indiana. But Farrell can put them in a position to be that guy that particular night. You know, I mean, Colin Hartman had a career high 15 the night that we saw Indiana against Maryland. Guy hadn't scored double figures all year. So Farrell puts a lot of guys into the right positions. And then when he feels like he needs to take over, he can.
You mentioned Maryland earlier as well. I haven't seen them in person yet. You have. And you brought up Mello Trimble. Maryland was a team I had no read on going into the season only because of the five transfers. And you just, I didn't know what he was going to have. What makes Mello Trimble a special guy when you see him in person? What should I be looking for next week?
You know, it's similar to what we've talked about. It's decision making. Another guy doesn't turn the ball over a whole lot, even though he's a freshman. And he, and another guy who's got takeover ability.
Yeah.
You know, it's when the game is on the line, I want to have Mello Trimble making a decision. And it's rare, as much as you see all these great freshmen playing, you know, especially over the last decade, you know, the league or the conferences have become about who are the best freshmen very often. You still lean on veteran guys to make the decisions in big moments in your games. Mello Trimble is a guy, despite the fact that he's a freshman, I want him making the decision in a game. And Mark Turgeon told us, the head coach of Maryland, told us that he had to sit Mello Trimble down after a game and say, you're here for a reason. You're a McDonald's All-American for a reason. You're supposed to be making big plays, and you cannot play hesitant. Because his first three, four college games, he was a very hesitant player. And then Mark Turgeon had a talk with him. He comes out the next game, scores, I think, 31 against Arizona State. And since then, outside of a bad night, you know, once every four, five, maybe six, seven games, he has been consistent, not turning the ball over, can score the ball. And, Steve, and you're going to have to update the numbers, obviously, when you see him, he gets to the free throw line about as much as any player in the nation, a very high free throw rate for this kid.
One of the underrated things for me, it's not talked about often, is that when a school goes into a new league, you know, we talk about league play and the familiarity. Well, guess what? They're all new to you. Did Mark Turgeon address that with you when you talked to him about the adjustment of, you know, he knew the ACC like the back of his hand. Now he's trying to learn personnel in the Big Ten and the degree of difficulty it is to do that at this stage.
You know what? Mark's not the only coach that has addressed that either this year, and I'll give you a name in a second. But going back to Mark, he said that you have to amp yourself up and you have to play to the level of your crowd or of the crowd that's there on a given night. And Indiana, by far, when I saw them, was the toughest atmosphere that they had seen. They're going to see some tough atmospheres when they get deeper into their Big Ten schedule. But that was as tough of an atmosphere as they faced all season. And for a lot of those guys, and there are some young guys on that team, and there are some guys who got used to playing in the ACC, it's an easier transition to make for Maryland than it is for the other guy I was referring to as Rick Pitino for Louisville.
Right.
It's an easier transition for Maryland to make because the ACC is, you know, down in a lot of those schools are down in the South. You know, they're intimate atmospheres in a lot of those places, or they're very loud. You know, you go to the Dean Dome, it's 20,000. You go to Cameron, it's 9,000 strong.
Right.
You get used to some of these atmospheres. When you go to Indiana, yeah, it's 17,000 straight up into the air, but it's very loud. You got to get, you know, you're going to have some transition period, but you're going to be more used to that than, say, Louisville. And Rick Pitino told me at the beginning of the season when they played their first ACC game, they went to Wake Forest. Wake Forest traditionally was always a very tough place to play. Hasn't been maybe in a couple of years past, but when ranked teams come in, when Carolina and Duke and a good NC State team or a good Miami team come in, Wake Forest gives them trouble. They have the tendency to play them really tough. Rick Pitino said in the Big East, you might go to a city. You might go to Madison Square Garden, and as intimidating as Broadway can be, if St. John's isn't playing that well, they're not going to fill out Madison Square Garden every single night. When you go play at Wells Fargo in Philadelphia, when you go play Villanova, yeah, that might be a tough atmosphere, but it's still an NBA arena that has some kind of separation. Now, when you go to the Pavilion, it's a little bit tougher because, you know, it's a smaller crowd with the right on top of you. But you didn't get a huge atmosphere every single night, and especially against maybe what you would call the bottom-tier teams in the Big East. Now, you go to Wake Forest, which isn't getting the wins necessarily, but is a quality coach and a quality program, things are getting difficult. So those transitions can be difficult, but I think it's easier for somebody like a Maryland when they've been in the ACC and are going to, you know, a still campus-related arena rather than for Louisville when they go from the cities to the campuses.
Interesting point. Adam, thanks so much. Appreciate the time. Look forward to the broadcast tonight.
Steve, as always, it's a pleasure to be on with you, my friend.
All right, Adam Amin from ESPN. Great to have him on the show today, giving you the perspective. And again, the ability to see a team in person makes an incredible difference. And that's why I wanted to have him on. He's seen so many teams this year. And somebody who's seen a lot of college basketball in his lifetime is coming up, by the way, in the next half hour. My broadcast partner for the last 10 and a half years as we go through our 11th season together, Dick Girardi. He'll be joining us in the next half hour. We're looking forward to that very, very much. Today's show being brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. The Beverage Supermarket. Imports, domestic microbrews, the best selection in beer. You don't want to show up to that Super Bowl party empty-handed. Oh, no. And on top of that, if you're hosting a Super Bowl party, you want to make sure that you are fully stocked and set to go. Brewers Outlet's one-stop shopping. I mentioned imports, domestics, microbrews, but they also the best selection of soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And let's face it, if you decide to do a selection of a pickle bar in your own home for the Super Bowl, people are going to love it. You're going to get all that and much more at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Coming up next half hour, we'll have Dick Girardi from the Penn State Sports Network and the Philadelphia Daily News. And also final half hour, Wayne Larrabee, the voice of the Green Bay Packers. Our thanks to Pete Jensen, NHL.com, and Adam Amin from ESPN. News at the top of the hour in a few moments on News Radio 1070 WKOK.